Edith Wharton has long been recognized as one of America's great novelists, but these days she's also a hot property. Her novella, Ethan Frome, was made into a movie earlier this year. The film version of her novel, The Age of Innocence, was just released last week. And this week, her final novel, The Buccaneers, was published. Critic Maureen Cargan says it's a romantic potboiler, but she recommends that before you read The Buccaneers, you first bone up on your basic Wharton masterpieces.
When Edith Wharton died in 1937, she left behind a manuscript of The Buccaneers that was about three-fifths done, plus some notes on where the plot was heading. The following year, the incomplete manuscript was published, and the reviews in both Time magazine and the Christian Science Monitor gushed about how The Buccaneers might have been Wharton's masterpiece. That's been the underground buzz on The Buccaneers ever since, which is why some of us Wharton fans felt queasy when we heard that a scholar and novelist named Marion Mainwaring was completing the novel. We needn't have worried about Mainwaring meddling with great art. I don't know what kind of cocktails those 30s reviewers were tossing down when they wrote their raves, but The Buccaneers certainly isn't Wharton's Sistine Chapel. It's more like her Mount Rushmore, entertaining, formulaic, and uncharacteristically unsubtle. Towards the end of her life, Wharton wrote a lot for women's magazines, and The Buccaneers testifies to their sentimentalizing influence. But because The Buccaneers is really just a rollicking romance novel, it doesn't matter so much that Mainwaring wrote the last part. Trust me, Danielle Steele could have completed The Buccaneers, and you wouldn't know the difference. The novel opens in the summer of 1873 in Saratoga, where a bevy of American beauties are scheming to find husbands. The five girls, who are the daughters of newly made millionaires, can't elbow their way into the private balls where old money meets and mates. Enter Laura Testvalley, who's hired as a governess to the youngest girl, the sensitive Nan St. George. Miss Testvalley suggests everybody might have better luck in England, where the impoverished aristocracy would welcome a lovely infusion of cash. The female buccaneers dutifully cross the Atlantic, and Nan hits the jackpot. She marries Ushant Foliot, the Duke of Tintagel. In best Gothic fashion, however, the Duke turns out to be gloomy and cold, and Nan falls in love with another man. Many chapters of bosom heaving follow. In the early part of this novel, an occasional sentence jumps out that sounds like vintage, understated Wharton. For instance, when describing Miss Testvalley's job, Wharton writes that she finished young ladies whom nature seems scarcely to have begun. But the unpleasant surprise here is how blunt most of Wharton's language is. Criticizing the invasion of American girls, an old geezer named Sir Helmsley Thwart calls them a spitting, tobacco-chewing crew who'll pollute his house. In masterpieces like The Age of Innocence and The House of Mirth, Wharton would have had Sir Helmsley indicate his displeasure simply by a fleeting arch of his furry eyebrow. Apparently, Wharton's original language was even blunter. In her author's note, Mainwaring says she revised passages where Wharton referred to racial matters in terms that would be offensive to modern readers. Too bad. One of the reasons why even a mediocre Wharton novel, like this one, is still interesting is because Wharton was such a discerning chronicler of society's rituals and prejudices. This cleaned-up, completed Buccaneers is an amiable diversion for a rainy autumn afternoon. But better yet, read the great novels where Edith Wharton is writing at the height of her powers in her own delicately calibrated and utterly devastating voice.
Maureen Cargan teaches at Georgetown University. She reviewed Edith Wharton's final novel, The Buccaneers.